Hello and a warm welcome to episode 107 of the Building Sustainability Podcast. This episode is with Jenny Ford, who is a circular economy practitioner and consultant. I'm Jeffrey Hart, and every fortnight, join me as I talk to designers, builders, makers, dreamers, and doers. Together, we can explore the wide world of sustainability in the built environment by talking to wonderful people who are doing excellent things. So this is the first of two episodes with Jenny Ford that were recorded in Bristol in late October 2023. The second episode will follow in about a week or so, once I've had a moment to edit it down. This episode sees us returning to a more regular schedule of podcast releases. I'm very pleased to say that we have a whole host of episodes recorded and ready to go. I'm aware that 2023 has been somewhat patchy in terms of new episodes, but I am very, very happy to be thoroughly re-inspired to bring you lots more fantastic conversations. One episode that is yet to be recorded is a special Christmas chat with friend of the podcast, Mike Hill. And for that, we are throwing open the topics to you, our listeners. So if you've got a question or a thought or something you want us to talk about, drop me an email. You can do that through the Building Sustainability website or through any one of the social media channels with questions you'd like answered, and we will do our very best. Another wonderful thing that is happening next year is that we are opening up the Nettlecombe Craft School for courses. We have got a whole load of courses in traditional crafts lined up, including basket weaving, bowl turning, brush making, lino printing, and a whole load more yet to confirm. Hopefully we can see you there for a lovely crafty time and a chin wag around the fire. Head on over to nettlecombecraftschool.com to book yourself a place now. In other event news, I will be talking at the ACAN, the Architects Climate Action Network, Natural Materials Group, on the 13th of November about earthen floors. The whole session is around natural flooring and features industry leaders discussing different natural flooring options and build-ups. Also, I'll be there. Check the ACAN website for that if you want to be in the session. Otherwise, it will be available on their website and their YouTube channel. I will stick a link in the show notes. As always, at this point, I take a moment to thank our new patrons. These are the folks who are financially supporting the podcast. New supporters this week are Sarah Hutchinson. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you to Anthony Brown, the Coppice Master himself. And finally to Rob Brooks, who is on the higher tier and so is getting himself a hand-carved wooden spoon. Currently, I am working my way through some beautiful sycamore from the Nettlecombe estate. So look out for your spoon coming through the door sometime soon. If you would like to support this podcast, and it is independently produced by me, takes a lot of time, quite a lot of hard work, then it would be really gratefully received. If you can support, then please do at patreon.com/buildingsustainability. But equally, if you can't afford it, then enjoy this for free. As per usual, there is a whole host of links that are mentioned in today's podcast. They are in the show notes which accompany this episode. Also on the website, buildingsustainabilitypodcast.com. Check them out if you want to dive further into what's been talked about. Finally, when I came to edit this podcast, I was struck by just how much I seem to derail and distract from Jenny's excellent words. So if you spot any slightly clunky editing, it's because I have snipped myself out for everyone's good. Right, that's it for me. I am back at the end. Enjoy, Jenny Ford.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah. Can you do a brief summary of what you do?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I can.
Well, great.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, go for it. I'm impressed.
I'm Jenny Ford. I am founder and project lead of Materials in Mind. And I have recently established, or in the process of establishing, Factory X, which is to be a destination future of construction show park, but also demonstrator of what's current practice in low carbon within the built environment industry. I am a sector economy practitioner and consultant within Materials in Mind, and that's sort of built on a couple of roles that I've had since sort of a background in as a CAD technician for
right.
engineered timber buildings.
Okay.
Followed by a master's in sustainable development in practice. And then my first role out of that was working with Snug Homes on low carbon modular buildings. And I was a co-designer and materials lead and researcher. Mm-hmm. And more recently, working with the tiny homes community as a circular economy consultant.
Nice. Great. That is succinct.
Thanks. I used to find it so difficult. And actually, I think everybody who knows me has a real hard time telling other people what I do. I don't really get it. But I think now that I've shifted a lot of what I talk about or how I frame things as circular economy, because circular economy is actually like a much bigger thing.
Yes.
But it can be nicely rounded up in that phrase. Then, you know, that's really useful for me, because then I can go into a conversation about what circular economy is, but I can just say I'm a circular economy practitioner and consultant. Yay.
Nice. Easy. great. Can you just tell me what I tell people what I do now? do we want to start with
General Hero?
Well, now you've made me uncomfortable. is there like a quick, what is circular economy?
Yeah, because there's like the standard definitions from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation. Now Letty's got their circular economy primer. Mm-hmm. And they're all, you know, can be simplified or as complex as you like. But when I think about it, it's really about using less mm-hmm. to start with. Making sure that things are joined up. So, you know, traditionally we have this linear economy where we are extracting materials from environments across the world. We are turning them into products, generally short-lived products in a lot of cases. Fortunately, within the built environment industry, that they have longer lives. So that is an advantage. But generally, we do not have an economic model in place to then keep those materials in circulation. So we're constantly going back to that extraction point. So the circular economy for me there represents keeping the loop going. So putting in place infrastructure, and importantly, that's the thing that I feel that we are super lacking. Mm-hmm. And putting in place, yeah, the infrastructure to enable that circularity to happen and those loops to close. And then finally around like the regenerative side, is that we also need to be regenerating those resources and those materials and industries and economies and communities that we have been constantly extracting from.
Mm-hmm. And depleting. I think
and it does cover all those things. It's not just you know, regenerative design in terms of like biodiversity and crops perhaps, or land restoration, but it is much more about like the economies, you know, like all our small workshop industry spaces you know, disappearing from our cities and towns. So like, how do we regenerate those kind of things through this new infrastructure that we can put in place?
Brilliant. Oh, you're good at talking. I'm slightly jealous actually. So describe your sort of route into this in a bit more detail.
So as I mentioned, I did a master's degree at UE in sustainable development and practice. And what was really interesting about that is that it covered loads of different subjects. I was looking for something that was more built environment focused, but we also bought our first house around that time, so couldn't afford to commute and go somewhere more exotic. So Bristol it was. And we looked at things like behaviour change and systems thinking and, you know, food and fashion and all these different things, and then the built environment modules. But through that, my thinking was very much about distributed manufacturing. It was about localizing material flows. And that was what my thesis was about. So it was very much looking at how we harness the materials that are flowing around our cities. And I interviewed a number of people through that process, including Jackson Moulding, who is the one of the directors, founding directors of Snug Homes. And following that, he got in touch and was like, you know, give us a call when you're done.
Nice.
And let's have a chat. Because I think that they'd been prototyping for a couple of years, and they'd kind of won this Grand Designs award, which was self-build on a shoestring. And it was really looking at how you transition or utilize self-build thinking in a more modular, repetitive, kind of scalable way.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, like, the conversation we had, I was like, oh, I had no idea you were working on this. I'd come to speak to him about a slightly different subject, about what they did with Ecomotive. And Snug Homes, they were at this point where they were potentially lining up with this Innovate UK funding thing, and that was the Enabling Housing Programme. In Bristol, and there was a number of different modular organizations, so they had an opportunity to build a pilot home.
Mm-hmm.
They had a person who wanted to buy the home so that it could be utilized, you know, lived in, and, you know, actually go into someone who was in housing need. So it fit the agenda really, really well. But yeah, what they wanted to achieve was basically demonstrating you could build a small home, so not a tiny home, but a small footprint home.
What's sort of definition of small in that scale?
So this was 22 square meters per floor, so 44 okay. square meters. So it had to be over minimum space standards, although there was a lot of complexity to that as well, because minimum space standards in the context we discovered really only applies over one story.
Right,
so
okay.
that whole standard applies to a single story. And there just hadn't been an instance of a two-story minimum space standards project, new build.
Right.
So we were already, you know, hitting these kind of planning hurdles before we even got into like what we were building it from and how we were building it and how we made it mortgageable as a modular home. So basically, it was a volumetric system. We were building sort of small container-sized units from timber ring beams.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the basic sort of structure and material palette ready when I joined. And this was like 2018. And I basically just interrogated all the material choices, looked at what they were trying to achieve values wise as a business, so helping them define those. Mm-hmm. My role just like blew up. It was basically like join the team and get stuck in. And yeah, I'm definitely like one of those people with, like, once you start the conversation, it can go off in all sorts of different directions, but definitely focused on the materials research, but how you make that align to an overall vision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether we had like a manifesto or a, you know, a vision piece around what Snug Homes was going to achieve, and which we did, and which we put together very succinctly for our ASBP award when we won Project of the Year. That was nice. And nice to see how well we aligned with those six pillars as well.
Mm.
But yeah, very much like community. So building it with and, you know, for the community, for it to be very low impact, and to be resourceful at all, you know, as a sort of overriding vision, and to have like the social and economic benefits as much as we could. So again, like with materials and purchasing wise, I looked at things like local economic multipliers. So okay. There's a thing called the LM3, and it enables you to track your spend. And we didn't use it on the pilot, but it's something that we would put in place for future builds. And it's really, we were trying to spend as much money with local businesses and smaller businesses. So if you buy online, your money goes out of a region. Aha. On the whole. If you buy from a merchant's or a chain store, a small percentage will stay because that's wages, but the or site rent of that premises, but the majority of the money goes outside. And then if you spend with a local independent, then the majority of that money stays in. Obviously the money for material purchase probably is brought in, but mm-hmm. everything else about it stays locally. So yeah, that's what we were trying to achieve there. And then yeah, generally making the material decisions, so interviewing material suppliers, thinking about the palette and what we could do. So one thing I liked modeling out, and this was really fun, was thinking about the palette or menu. Mm-hmm. So that you could have a course, a palette of materials that suited different like budget options, and you know what you could include in that and how exciting you could make those mm-hmm. those palettes or those menus of materials. And so for us, you know, we were trying to achieve like a very affordable home, and particularly we had a tight budget for the pilot, but looking at recycled cotton denim, mm-hmm. which again was a product I'd come across through the ASBP, cellulose, so working with Warm Cell. And both Jackson and I had prior relationships with the team there. The timber ring beams came down from Scotland. So they were, did we get them from Scotland? I think we might have got them from elsewhere. You can, timber ring beams from wherever they came from. But we've explored several different relationships with them because as we started building, you know, kind of new suppliers kind of appear and you can explore what you'll do next time and where you'll...
Yes, it's always kind of, you know, we're doing this now, but in the future it might be, or there's hope, like, you know, this is going to be better. And
yeah, can we reduce
use these, you know,
transportation distances and things yeah. like that. So you can, you start somewhere and there's always improvements. It's like, you know, we've just done, I also led them through ISO 9001 because it was the first step to getting the BOPAS or similar NHBC plus what we need to have for a mortgageable home. And so you need to have ISO 9001. And that really is all about incremental improvements to the whole business operation. So yeah, that was really fun. But yeah, we got to test out materials. We got to look at, you know, as small as using our offcut of the denim insulation instead of using expanding foam around the window or, nice. Or using like expanding tape stuff. So we because it was a pilot, we had also this opportunity to experiment with what we used and where and to document it. So the other thing I brought into that project was a partnership with Cambridge University and their digital shoestring project. And looking at, so we developed an app that we could use on the site, which was about quality, but it was really enabling us to record a process and record if it worked or not. So, you know, one of our team could like install something, or they would go to do the next thing and they would go, this doesn't look quite as I had expected, or this hasn't worked quite as expected. So they could record it on a picture, raise it to either the site manager or to the design team.
That's
and it's then
great.
Captured for us to review later and improve.
Because normally you just get a grumpy builder going like, well, that's a stupid bloody idea. You know, obviously that's not going to work. This is... and that's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
And they whinge about it over a cup of tea and then...
Yeah. And, you know, I think, again, that comes back to that ISO thing. If having these kind of like business things that you do within your business, as opposed to, you know, it just being a project. And this is the advantage with modular and you know, when it comes to talk about Factory X later, why I want to include all different types of construction, because as much as modular's kind of been gaining a bit of a negative rep because of like what's in the news, but very little of that refers to these kind of small businesses that are doing repeatable builds, and let's just call them that, because they might be kit of parts, they might be, you know, kind of timber frame approaches, but generally what you're trying to do is have a fixed palette of materials, a repeatable process, and a way to just have like that constant incremental improvement. So like I will always be aiming to kind of like have a similar structure at the end of it, but we can improve the ways that we achieve that on every single project we do. And that's what I was really interested about, their approach. The other thing we did was work with early stage builders. So there was a few green building master students from CAT, and some local community members and other volunteers from, you know, who'd heard about the project and who reached out and wanted to be involved. And so they were very open to these approaches, and, you know, didn't come with sort of like that big knowledge bank of like, I do this, this is the way I've always done it. Which can really be a setback when you're trying to implement, you know, lean construction practice or new materials.
It sort of seems to me like, yeah, there's like the we do it this way because that's how it's always been done, yep. builders. And then there's sort of like a new breed of builder that's, you know, thinking about it, wanting to improve it. All the things you're saying, like thinking about materials, thinking about waste, thinking about well-being of their employees.
Well, actually, it's interesting because so I'm teaching future of construction boot camps. I don't like that word either. skills boot camps.
Let's just stick all of the phrases we hate in this one.
For Weka at the moment, and Weka? So the West of England Combined Authority, they've got like a skills agenda. So it covers lots of things, so sustainable businesses, digital practice. And then they've got a construction interest as well, because I think they've been looking at the areas which have been identified as having, you know, a severe decline in labour, and just, you know, kind of like particularly with construction, you've got an ageing workforce and then quite big skills gaps in the areas that they're trying to like move forward. And so like modern methods of construction is a big focus of those boot camps. And I think what's interesting, like, so there's the bit of framing when you talk about modern methods of construction, people can be like, I have no idea what that is, but actually most people have got some involvement with it, particularly with the category 6 and 7, which is site-based initiatives. So either site-based processes like you know, I'm looking out the window here and there's like a big scaffold tent that enables you to build in all conditions. That's essentially a modern method of construction.
Right. You
know,
it's
bringing a factory condition to a site. And then the product based and efficiencies like large format materials or like concrete formers that, you know, you just bring to site and pour cement in. So, you know, a lot of people are really familiar with it, but we tend to call the people who are not working in these approaches conventional builders.
Yeah.
And then there's the more politer one, which is like traditional building, but then traditional for most people would refer to something else like traditional crafts and skills. And it just, yeah, it's just confusing. And I think that actually... it's more having a conversation about better practice in general. You know, I understand the need for the category approaches, because that's how you divide out, you know, volumetric construction from kit of parts from site-based initiatives. But this kind of division of, you know, who falls into, you know, old school, new school, like, it's a bit divisive. But what I think everyone can relate to is things like materials that are a joy to use, process that are a joy to use, processes that make a difference. If you can see that this, like, actually, like, I'm really frustrated every time I come on this site, because it's like there's all this like rubbish outside, and I just don't like, I'd like to see that change. And there are obviously ways that we can like make that change, but it, when you're working day to day as a builder, and this is like, you know, when I was figuring out what role I would have, would I be an architect or did I want to like get involved on sites, and then fell into this, I didn't really know what a consultant was. just like,
I still don't know what a consultant is.
Feeling it out every day. But it's having the ability to step away from the day-to-day activity and observe. For me, I'm, you know, just observing everything all the time, the good things, the bad things, and going like, what if they tried this? What if you brought a bit of that practice to this scenario? And then having the ability to, you know, have that conversation with the people who can make those improvements. And I think then if you're talking about materials, people who have had like, you know, been spent their life installing itchy insulation or having very like dusty materials that they've been working with, and then you suddenly offer the potential for them to try something different, but this actually can be worked with similarly. It's having the opportunity for them to find that material, to have exposure to that particular, you know, new opportunity is the tricky bit. But yeah, I think everyone can be open to it once they recognize that, you know, what they've been doing isn't like, actually, I don't really enjoy
working with that. Yeah, it's like, do you want a day installing rock wool or do you want to use sheep's wool? It's like, you only need to use sheep's wool once to go, oh, it's really nice. I'm not itchy. My eyes aren't puffy. You know,
yeah, like the denim insulation one, we found the big pair of scissors that would like cut that really nicely. You know, I've used it when we had our retrofit survey for this place. We had the thermal imaging people from First Thermal come round, and they identified a load of gaps under skirting boards. And I just went to Snug. I was like, can I just borrow a sheet of just bring back a bat? And we've just been cutting strips off it and stuffing the gaps in the house.
Brilliant.
And it's so nice because it's all squishy, it's soft, it's like, you know.
I like, yeah, I've been using the Indie Nature hemp stuff.
Yeah.
Love it as a product. It's quite hard to cut is my only negative. Maybe I just haven't got the technique. I've got one of those insulation swords.
Yeah.
It looks like a Excalibur bread knife thing. Yeah, it's just like finding the right way.
But, yeah, and that is like, you know, if you've been working in a particular way all your life, you've got the method down. So if you change material, like I was saying earlier about working in this in the office when I was a technician, and you know, the MD was constantly trying to bring new sustainable initiatives, but it often meant changing your day-to-day practice as like, you know, as an office worker or in the factory environment. And people would be really like, stop changing stuff. But actually, once you've made that change, you're just going to be doing that every day. So it very quickly becomes normal again. It's just like, you can't see that the other side over that little hump. Yeah, it's interesting. But I mean, that was probably exactly the reason that I got into all this, was really about enabling people to get over that hump.
Right. Nice. A hump reducer. Or like a,
yeah,
like giving people a booster.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that project kind of go with the Snug, what did you call it? Not trial project?
Yeah, pilot project.
Pilot.
Amazing. I mean, really, I mean, it was a a purchased home. So as much as it was a pilot in as part of the Innovate UK program,
was also an end product.
It was, yeah, it was just our first home, which I guess is always the pilot. You know, we tested all the processes out, but we also had to be high quality. It had to be a livable home. It had to perform as we said it was going to perform. And we had to ensure, because it was, you know, rented to someone, that we could form a relationship where we could get that post-occupancy evaluation, which is a thing I think is missing from nearly all construction, you know, no matter whether it's a resident or commercial or industrial space. Getting that feedback is the only way that you're ever going to make those improvements. But yeah, amazing. It was, you know, that moment when the modules are taken away from the site we were building on. So we were leased a site by the council to build on, which was an old community centre. And we built four modules on that site, which was the most we could build at the one time. So it was the house was made up of four modules. So two came together on the ground floor, two on the top floor. And then they were transported, I think, under 2 miles to their final destination, which was a back garden site. We had strip foundations for those. And yeah, the day that it was like taken away, like we followed it in the car.
Nice.
Got a little video of it being transported and then landing on site and then being connected together. And then, you know, then the top floor coming on. And then because we also designed the staircase, which was CNC'd, and the, you know, we installed that beforehand, but it essentially all has to fit together. Like, this is the other thing with building like volumetric and kit of part type buildings, is that, you know, the quality and accuracy has to be there, no matter like whether you're building it in a, you know, a super factory or you're building it in an old community center in the car park. If the accuracy is not there, it's not going to connect, and then you're going to have performance problems. And so the fact that the CNC staircase fit like a dream, the fact that all these modules went together, and we used the denim insulation as a cushion between them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And, you know, that, and again, those were kind of those materials research elements, which we looked at all different, or I looked at all different ways of buffering the two pods, because, you know, they also need to be demountable at some point. You know, we wanted to design for demountability, for like reconstruction elsewhere. Obviously, you'd have to take off all the timber cladding. But yeah, to have that in mind, not necessarily that you would take the whole structure apart, but certainly to be able to reconfigure the modules or maybe expand it at some point. Not so much in a back garden site, but, you know, the potential, we wanted to explore the potential within the pilot, because we had the opportunity to do that. And to maybe, you know, if you wanted to put a lean-to on part of it, you know, how would you do that? So we needed to be aware, we needed to understand the material connections and things like that. Yeah, it was amazing. And we worked with local tradespeople. So we had like local plumbers, electricians, roofers getting involved. The solar was installed on site. We had a solar assisted air source heat pump.
Lovely.
We were looking for slimline rain butts for ages that weren't like uber expensive, but getting ones that we could mount on the side of the building. There's some nice ones out there, but they're, you know, when you're at the end of the end of the budget at that point, you're like, can we?
I've been researching rain butts recently, and it's like, it's just a tub. How can that be so expensive? Yeah.
So kind of where I ended in terms of what we've got now is we've got a sort of a materials register, we've got a preferred supplier list, we've got a bit of a red list and a black list of like suppliers that we researched and we decided didn't really fit with the ethos of what we were trying to do. And that's, I think that's really important for any company to consider. We understood what waste we were generating. So as I was doing, because I did a lot of the drawings as well and the 3D models during the construction phase, which is, yeah, so multi-roles in this job, then you're also able to kind of just about figure out what offcuts you get and try and feed them back into other bits. But we basically wanted to, on a very kind of like regular basis, like weekly basis, measure what we'd produced in terms of waste. So we just had like recycling boxes and a digital luggage strap, weigher. And yeah, we started recording it that way. And most things could enter recycling streams quite easily. And then we could just bag things up in a dumpy bag if we needed to get rid of a bigger amount. But yeah, we never at any point needed a skip.
Nice.
And that for me was where I wanted to be. I wanted to understand the process of recording waste. And then just in terms of like appliances, fixtures and fittings, we also ended up with a document where I had presented kind of two or three best options. And that was through a combination of like ethical consumer and, you know, sort of different green guides on, you know, be it low energy or low water use appliances, trying to find like the best resources so that even if product wasn't available, we knew where we'd researched it and where might give us those kind of best options again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like where we might buy them from. So preferred supplier lists.
Nice.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I was just thinking about the waste that came out of building my house. And I took the, I don't know if I ever shared the photo, but I took a photo of all of the rubbish bags that I filled during the length of construction. And it sounds like my house is probably maybe a quarter of that build. But most of my waste was plastic wrapping that insulation came wrapped in.
Yeah.
And it's that soft plastic waste. And I was like, you know, the co-op had just put those soft plastic bins outside.
Yeah.
Thing. And I was like, if I went down every day with one insulation bale wrapping and stuffed it in there,
yeah,
you know, could I get rid of it all that way? Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's... like being conscious of that stuff is so important, isn't
yeah
it? And tracking, monitoring,
yeah,
recording.
And so much easier when you've been involved in the design process, because you I think you take away a bit more, because most of the waste generated that you don't expect is wrapping or like, you know, tape backing. So for the more high performance a building is, like membranes tend to be quite usable because you don't really have any sort of backing to it, and you can use other bits for patching, so it's useful to hold on to that stuff. But the air tightness tape and things like that, I mean, it's literally the same amount of, well, because of core, so slightly more waste than the stuff you use, because you also get all the bits of tape that you don't end up using, all the backing. So yeah, you use less of the whole material you receive from your supplier. And yeah, I worked with a friend who was also on the Snug project, and he was building a house just outside of Bath at the same time. And we basically unpacked his skip, and put everything in piles.
Nice.
And kind of forced him into it. So like, I just want to come and see in your low carbon passive house. I think he was building a passive house. And you know that it's, you know, it's got a lot of different types of polystyrene, like the really hard glassy stuff through to kind of like regular. And then all the tape backing, but like straps, like off, like the kind of straps you get on dumpy bags, just straps.
Mm.
There were like long links of them. I don't know what they were binding together, but I've got all of them. And then there were like these boxes that had, so the boxes all got damaged because they were cardboard and they'd been left in the skip. But they had the plastic handle holder, so you could take out the plastic frame bit and the handle. And I was like, I'm going to make new packaging things with it. I haven't yet. I tried to help someone out in Sparks the other day with one. But, yeah, it was just really interesting unpacking everything and seeing that even from, you know, an environmentally sensitive project, that the wastes are, you know, are still quite generic.
Yes. One of the things a sort of decision I made during my build was to stop using wool insulation that's got plastic in it. And like the plastic is there to create the volume which keeps the insulating. And I so desperately want to use British wool for insulation. It's, you know, just such, it's such an obvious choice. But to realise that I spent a day doing kind of wood fibre insulation and wool insulation, and then all my sweepings at the end of the day, I was like, well, I can't.
I can't just sweep them out the door. I can't do it.
No, exactly. All the wood fibre stuff, it just went into a big heap in the garden.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's like, oh, that's microplastics. Ah, yeah. So frustrating, because it's such a brilliant thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really great that we have a really burgeoning like bio-based materials industry. And I think a lot of people, I mean, on the ACAN chats for various different subjects, but yeah, natural materials is one of the groups that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And that was sometime, earlier in the year, there was like one of those kind of like endless streams. Every time you kind of turned WhatsApp back on, it was still the same conversation of like, does this have a polymer binder? Does this have a... Oh my God, I didn't know that. And yeah, I mean, I'd only come across it with some of the materials we were using, but we used cellulose, which was great. And the denim insulation, I can't remember now. But generally, you know, that was... you can put that back into textiles, waste streams. But yeah, other than that, we didn't really use... any others that we needed to particularly research. So we still, when I came across that, that was quite eye-opening. But I've been able to regurgitate that information to quite a lot of people now and go, did you know? Because, you would hope that you could just, sweep it out the door.
It's why I want to use a bio-based material.
It was one of the drivers for me using this material. Damn it.
It was funny, like, it was just that, suddenly sweeping up and being like, very conscious of my bin bag. I could say it was because of it was research, or it was laziness because I was building at the top of a hill, but I kept all my bin bags for like the duration of the build. Realizing that.
I would say, like, just on sort of to wrap up what some of the materials we used on the snug. I wanted to demonstrate reuse of materials, and I wanted to demonstrate sort of using, so we wanted to have a balance between natural materials, recycled content, high recycled content. I'd been reading a lot, in my degree, I'd researched a lot of the wrap work, and they no longer do stuff with construction focus, but they produced some really interesting stuff around how to drive the higher recycled content in building products and what we really should aiming for across the manufacturing industry. So for closed loop recycling, ideally.
Is wrap standing for something?
I'm sure it does. Waste and Resources Action Program.
Okay.
Let's good. Say. I can double check that. But yeah, wrap, they are involved with researching waste across all different industries. They work a lot around like food and food and beverage stuff. Yeah. But they did do a lot of work in construction. And that's sort of all finished. That's all wrapped up now. Cut that.
No way.
So yeah, I had these kind of goals, and we in Froome, there was an organization that I'd also researched and interviewed called Stormboard, And they were actually a plastics machinery manufacturing company called Protomax, and they're based in Europe, I think. Well, the guy was in Froome, but Nick was in Froome, and they manufactured this plastic making machinery for the industry. And he decided he wanted to make one that could work with non-recyclable plastics.
Okay.
And so they designed this piece of kit called the P2. And it's actually a whole factory setup. You know, you need a small factory to put the P2 inside it. And it's several bits of kit in a sort of sequence. And essentially they would take plastic that had, you know, like integrated foil backings and stuff that was quite hard to separate. I mean, I think a lot of random plastic came to them as well, but also hangers, you know, awkward stuff, basically. Mm-hmm. And so whereas companies like Smile Plastics are kind of producing sort of like more high-end, they really focused on what the pattern of the different plastics that were being recycled and going into them when they pressed it. It was all like beautiful patterns. Mm-hmm. Stormboard was really, he set it up to sort of intercept the hoardings market. He was fed up with seeing like timber hoardings that were using kind of virgin materials. They were being painted with loads of synthetic paint and they would still degrade, you know, year by year, probably only in place ever for a maximum of like 4 years. And you can tell them they're really decrepit then, and they just get replaced with more virgin timber. And so he was like, well, we could just create 8x4 sheets of this recycled plastic, create these big heat presses that are really like robust sizes. And they even designed a sort of like a scaffold or a ballast system for them.
Okay.
But it was so hard to talk to anyone in construction, because basically when you put hoardings up, it's a, you know, when you're doing the costings, like every time you paint the hoardings, you're paying a labourer and you're buying paint. And there is a markup on both of those things. So every time you do that, your client is paying you the markup. So, although you might not be making any money, much money on it, you're making some money on the fact that you've gone down this particular material route, which is ridiculous.
Goodness.
And so I'm sure for a few other reasons around like confidence or, you know, not really wanting to disrupt what your normal business as usual is, he found it really hard to intercept. So he was finding other uses, but you could use it as shuttering for concrete.
Yeah.
Garden centers were using it. He designed a few kind of like emergency shelter buildings. And, you know, plastic's not always right for all these applications. But actually, I mean, I would love to see it as hoardings. I think it's a perfect application for it, because also if they break, you just put it back into that recycling system. So it's
a
closed loop. But we used it for some exterior panels on the snug, and we used it as our sort of baseboard around the bottom.
Externally.
So when our building went onto the strip foundations, you've got the gap to ground. And so underneath and below the cladding, we just had a sort of cut sheet of that. But the things that you need to remember, and like you're saying with the sweepings, is that you've got to be careful where you cut those materials, because then they're just going into the environment. So doing it, making sure that you either, you know, hoovering it, doing it on a clear space, either, you know, on a plastic sheet, you know, so just so that, when you work with materials like that, that you're also thinking about what you're using, the way you're cutting it, and what waste it's generating, you know, what dusts and stuff.
Yes, I suppose. I don't think that's a word. There is also, like, what happens? Does it break down sunlight? That's my, like, I struggle with sort of recycled plastics and that sort of thing, especially because it's like, you know, of course we need to do something with what is currently waste.
Yeah,
but also, is plastic really a good product at all?
Yeah.
Like in those situations?
I mean, even more so in our interiors, you know, the amount of plastic things, you know, I've been doing quite a lot around indoor air quality at the moment. And that was something that we talked at great lengths about within the snug. I mean, we had an MVHR, but we also wanted to put a a monitoring system in there and do a test before the resident moved in.
Mm.
And then essentially you're kind of advised not to do a test 6 months later because you're sort of at the peak of off-gassing at that point.
What with your new sofa and all of the...
everything's settling and all the, you're sort of at peak point. So, you know, ideally you test it when you... when everything's just gone in, and then like a year later, and you can do subsequent tests. But what would have been really nice if we'd have found an affordable sort of particulate monitoring device. And again, I did quite an extensive bit of research on that, and we didn't really find the best thing. I think Waverton Analytics had a sort of test tube thing, so you could actually go in and do a physical test, and they tested for all sorts of levels of different gases and substances and particulate.
Do you know IKEA do one now?
Do they?
Mm. George, Archetype George, he was just posting on Twitter about it. It's like 40 quid.
I wonder what it tests for.
Yeah, it was definitely particulate matter. I don't think it had CO2, which is what I really want to get, because I really want to dial down my how hard I need to run my MVHR.
Exactly. I think that's an absolute must have, isn't it, in those
if you're making airtight projects. Buildings.
It's... Yes, 100%. And I agree with that. I think I wanted to use Stormboard because I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And we had some applications where we could test it. It wasn't in, you know, direct the faces we used it on weren't, you know, constantly exposed to sunlight and things. But I think, I think the hoarding application for me is such a good way to go, because it's, you know, it's far enough away from, you know, people. It's not, you know, directly in your living environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dealing. So what I think with plastics recycling is it needs, like, we need more of it. It needs to go into the right products. And, you know, particularly when you've got non-recyclable plastics or complex, you know, composite materials, these kind of initiatives are really good. But I think that those companies, and what I quite liked about Nick's approach and, you know, having this Protomax deciding that they wanted to make the P2 machine, is that they feel like an agile business.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was another theme that I wrote heavily about, and what I'm really kind of interested in pushing with Factory X is this idea of the need for constant change and innovation within businesses, so that we can't sat still for way too, mm-hmm. way too long. Agility and, you know, kind of feeling like we're in control of de-risking stuff,
mm-hmm.
Is really important. And testing things out, if they don't work, you know, it's not a problem. That's like research and development. Like,
yes.
That's what it's all about.
That's learning.
Yeah, absolutely. Just, lastly on Snug is, we won a ton of awards. So it was amazing. Most recently, 2 Reba Awards. Would you have it?
Really?
Like, we just bought tickets to the Reba thing because we'd been on shortlisted, but we just thought we'd go for a jolly and have a nice dinner.
Yeah.
And then we got called up once, and then we got called up again. It was so unexpected. That was very fun.
Nice.
We got lots. So it was really nice to be recognised for it. We have a number of projects in planning, and we have a tiny house, proper tiny house that is just about near completion. Just waiting for some external cladding bits to go on. We couldn't decide what to finish it in. We had all sorts of ideas. So,
obviously my ears have picked up at tiny house. How's that? What's that?
So essentially, it's one module,
mm-hmm.
Where we used 4 together to make the smaller, the standard Snug. So the 44 square meter Snug is a 1-person, 1-bed. Within space standards,
mm-hmm.
So you could legitimately build it in places. The tiny house is taking the single module design but extending it a little bit taller,
mm-hmm.
still within what you can transport, obviously. Like, you know, I listened very astutely to your episode on all the considerations for like transporting what kind of vehicle you're gonna move it on the back of.
And, oh my goodness,
you know, because there's so much that goes into figuring and the weight stuff, obviously. So we were able to take the Snug Tiny a little bit higher, and it's got a mezzanine floor.
Like a mezzanine, you're allowed to call a sleeping loft or not?
I'm not sure how they're sort of marketing the, because it's a tiny house, it doesn't really sit within.
Yeah, it falls between the cracks.
Yeah, but I guess it's you know, it's adding to that conversation, isn't it? So we'll see. But yeah, hopefully, you know, as a rentable unit or. As a sort of extra bit of accommodation for an existing house or, don't know. It was just, we wanted to explore it. It's one of, this where Snug was kind of born, you know, with this interest in tiny houses and self-build. So, yeah, just seeing what else we can come up with.
Aw, my friend Hugh was working for Snug for a bit.
Yeah.
And he said that every morning they read out one of Emma Appleton's, 100 ways. And I was like, yes.
Yeah, it's really lovely, actually. And I shared my last session with the skills boot camp is traditional versus modern cultures. And I kind of go through material cultures and I go through health and safety culture and these kind of like on-site efficiencies versus other standard practices, waste cultures and things. And the other one that I like to touch on is the 100 ways. And that is just, you know, day-to-day kind of culture of being on a building site. And especially when we talk a little bit about the health and safety or the, sort of this increase in sort of fairness, equality, respect, all those kind of aspects and the mental health issues that surround a lot of construction workers. It's really important. The 100 ways is just such a lovely thing to like bring into that morning check-in, have a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Someone picks a number and that's our mantra for the day.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me so happy. A huge thanks to Jenny. Really insightful stuff. If you have enjoyed that, then join us for the next episode where Jenny introduces the incredibly exciting Factory X. As I mentioned, there is a big old list of links in the show notes. Those include Materials in Mind, the Ella McCarthy Foundation, the Leti Circular Economy Primer, Snug Homes, LM3, Recycled Denim Insulation, the ASBP, that's the Alliance for Sustainable Building Products. Make sure you check out all the excellent stuff that they've got going on. ISO 9001, Digital Shoestring, ACAN Natural Materials, linked to their YouTube as well. Stormboard, the IKEA Air Quality Monitor. There's a link to Emma Appleton's 100 Ways, both the website and to the episode that she recorded for this podcast. There's a link to episode 61 with Duncan Baker Brown, which is all about circular economy in the built environment. So if this episode has piqued your interest, then head on over there for loads more brilliant examples. If this was your first episode and you have enjoyed it, then make sure you check out all 106 other episodes and make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any future episodes. Equally, if you've enjoyed this episode, then please do take 2 seconds and give it a quick share. Really helps me out. And if you find this podcast really useful, then please do consider supporting via the Patreon link. It's in the show notes. Your support helps me out and you also get loads of bonus episodes and content currently standing at around 10 hours worth. That's it from me. Wishing you all the best. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.